Welcome to Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. Coming up, Jay Fox will talk with an expert about new legislative efforts that could address the obesity epidemic and also save individuals and institutions money. And Jay will speak with a chef about dairy alternatives for health-conscious Central Ohioans during Dairy-Free February. Plus, Doug Petcash of Face the State will have a look at state politics. First up, on Columbus Perspective,
36% of Franklin County, Ohio adults are listed as obese, and obesity is quickly rising to the top of the list of chronic conditions here. According to the CDC, more than 40% of adults nationally have obesity, mostly seen among adults aged 40 to 59. That's their prime working years. Obesity also increases the risk of developing other chronic conditions, including diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and many cancers. Dr. Kenneth Thorpe is a professor and chair of the Department of Health Policy and Management in the Rollins School of Public Health in Emory University. He's also chairman of the PFCD Partnership to Fight Chronic Disease. And a new study from that organization highlights the potential financial savings resulting from modest to moderate weight loss by obese adults. A lot of language. Welcome, Dr. Thorpe. How do we define obesity?
Well, obesity is really technically is the relationship between your height and weight. So in technical terms, if you have a body mass index over 30, then you're considered obese. So somebody who's 5'10" and weighs 260, 270 pounds plus would be considered obese.
What demographic of people are at greatest risk for obesity?
Well, unfortunately, it really cuts through the whole distribution of individuals. African-American, Hispanic, Caucasian. And unfortunately, we're increasingly seeing it among our kids. So childhood obesity is on the rise as well. So it's one of those things that you talked about the statistics nationally. It's 40% are overweight or obese nationally, but if you include overweight, it's over 73%. And those numbers have gone dramatically up over the last 15, 20, 25 years. And it's a major factor driving the growth in healthcare expenditures because, as you noted, it leads to chronic disease, type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, elevated cholesterol, heart disease, pulmonary disease, depression, and so on. And we're seeing all those chronic illnesses on the rise.
So this study was commissioned with regard to financial savings. What prompted that conversation?
Well, there's been a lot of discussion, obviously, about the new GLP weight loss medications. And the primary focus has been on what do they cost. And fortunately, those costs are going down. I wanted to sort of do the other side of the equation saying, well, if we do these interventions in terms of diet, exercise, lifestyle, maybe a GLP-1 medication, what benefits do you get? And what we found is that through the magnitude of weight loss that we're seeing with these medications, you could see about a 20% reduction in healthcare spending for an employer, and about the same for the Medicare program. So the offsets, the savings are very substantial.
And there are also personal savings because it makes common sense that if we consume less, we're likely reducing our spending on consumables, correct?
No, exactly. I mean, for an individual, you're going to pay less out of pocket for healthcare since your total spending goes down. And what we're seeing is that given the fact that you're eating less, that you're spending less at the grocery store. So it has a variety of benefits.
Do obese people typically spend more money than non-obese people? Have we done that study?
Well, yeah, looked at certainly food consumption is higher in that population, but we've also seen studies recently looking at how much money do you spend on food when you lose weight? And we're finding that people who lose weight are eating less. They're spending less at the grocery store, and there's some indication that you're spending less on processed foods, which is a good thing, So there's all kinds of benefits. You spend less out of pocket as an individual, spend less on groceries. You're more likely to be more productive at work, less likely to be absent from work. So the health benefits and the economic benefits of losing weight are very substantial.
So what are you planning to do with the information? Are you going to testify before Congress? Will there be legislation? What's the impact?
Well, sure. We've been working on promoting legislation that would have, for example, the Medicare program cover weight loss medications that just produce weight loss. I mean, most of these medications produce not only weight loss, but reductions in blood sugar, reducing future heart attacks, cardiovascular events, and so on. But under statute, under law, Medicare can't cover medications that just promote weight loss. And we think that that's a mistake. And we're really sort of trying to promote the ability of Medicare to cover these medications.
And if that changes, then the 55-plus set could be healthier, as well as those that are on Medicare for non-age-related reasons.
No, exactly. We think that going forward, this would be sort of one of the best things the Medicare program could do. They already have a lifestyle program called the Diabetes Prevention Program, which is very effective, saves Medicare money. Unfortunately, a lot of seniors eligible for it are not participating in it. So we think the combination of a lifestyle program, reducing sugary drinks and heavily processed foods, and if necessary, these new innovative weight loss drugs is a real important part of Medicare's future of having a healthier senior population and saving Medicare money.
Final question for you. Do you think you'll have bipartisan support for this?
Yeah, I do. I think that certainly from the Trump administration, that their focus is on chronic disease on the healthcare side. And anything that we can do to reduce the number of new chronically ill patients and lessen the severity of how chronically ill the patients are, I think is going to get bipartisan support for sure.
I want to thank Dr. Kenneth Thorpe for sharing his time with us today. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
You're listening to Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's Jay Fox.
Columbus is a food town, known for its great restaurants. The capital city also has a lot of home chefs who do a lot of cooking. I'm one of them. Columbus is also a health-conscious community. Central Ohioans continue to prioritize their health and explore emerging food trends, hot topics, things like where can I get more protein, gluten-free options, dairy intake. All of these are taking center stage. The dairy-free curious are on the hunt for protein-packed ingredients, and holistic private chef and seasoned recipe developer Chef Jane Olivia is challenging Americans and all of us in Columbus to take part in Dairy-Free February. Welcome, Jane.
Hi, thank you for having me, Jay.
It's our pleasure, but no cheese? Say it isn't so.
It is so. So it seems like Americans are looking for some dairy-free alternatives, and I'm here to tell you that it is possible to get some delicious, healthy, and low-sugar, high-protein dairy alternatives.
Well, let's start with the recent survey about attitudes towards dairy alternatives. You found in reviewing the survey that there were surprising new results. What did you learn?
Definitely. So we found that about 68% of Americans are dairy-free curious, so they're looking to try at least one new dairy-free product in 2025. That is a lot higher than we've seen in previous years. And I think it's just because Americans are looking for healthier options to their favorite foods. It seems like everyone is sick and tired of the bad ingredients and hidden sugar and things that we can't even pronounce on that food label.
So if I'm one of those people, and I'm not saying I am, and I'm not saying I'm not, but if I were one of those people that has to have cheese, what are my options for dairy alternative?
So there are tons of different brands who are offering some dairy alternatives. I will say that Kite Hill's lineup is the cleanest and also the most high in protein options that I've found. I work with a lot of people as a chef who are looking for healthy dairy-free alternatives. And I think that Kite Hill's line of their dips and their spreads, their cream cheese and their yogurt are some of the best that you can find on the market.
Okay, so inquiring minds want to know what's in the stuff. What makes it taste and look like dairy, even though we know it's not dairy?
Yeah, so I think that most that you'll find on the store shelves, you can't really pronounce a lot of the ingredients. There's a lot of starches and everything, but Kite Hill uses a blend of some nuts, like cashews, make it really creamy, coconut milk, things like that, that are super creamy. They blend up super well to make a thick, spreadable cream cheese or a dip.
So you're a chef, and you've experimented mm-hmm. with all kinds of cuisines in your career. You're now challenged mm-hmm. with Dairy-Free February. What's the first thing that comes to mind that you're going to make?
Well, I think with all of the parties that are going to be coming up with the Super Bowl and things like that, I think some sort of grazing board is very ideal with a little something for everyone. There's lots of like crudite, so you have some veggies, some chips, some crackers, pretzels, veggies, fruit. Keep it healthy, keep it light, and then a dairy-free dip like a dairy-free tzatziki from Kite Hill or also their caramelized onion dip. Absolutely fabulous for your next gathering or party. I really recommend that. Everyone would love it.
Now, every time I go to the big game party, whether I host it or someone else does, there's a 7-layer dip. So let's say I want to stick to that tradition. How do I do that without cheese, without dairy?
Yep, absolutely. You totally can. So Kite Hill has a ton of spreadable cheese options. They have like a whipped ricotta. They have the cream cheese. And if you've ever made the 7-layer dip, you know that there's a ton of cream cheese in it in pretty much every one of those layers. So you can just simply replace your cream cheese in that recipe with the Kite Hill cream cheese.
Some people like to make macaroni and cheese with heavy whipping cream. If we're going to make homemade macaroni and cheese and we're using the dairy-free cheese, what can we do to replace that thickness and depth that comes with heavy whipping cream?
Definitely. So that is a challenge that I found when I'm cooking for my clients who love flavor and cuisine of that comfort food. So what I usually would recommend is Kite Hill has a line of Greek yogurt. And if you've ever seen Greek yogurt, it's super thick, super creamy. They have a zero sugar plain version, which you can easily mix into any sort of cooking. It could be savory. It could be sweet, but I definitely like using it in the savory. You can't even tell that it's yogurt. It tastes just like the creamy mac and cheese that you're used to, and it works great.
So have you ever done a blind taste test with any of your clients to see whether they can tell that it's dairy-free?
Maybe without them knowing. So whenever they request some sort of pasta dish or something, I won't even tell them that it's dairy-free, and they have no complaints whatsoever.
All right. So, Chef, where can consumers go if they want to learn more? Because obviously, if you're dipping your toe in, or you call it dairy-free curious, you're going to need recipes. Where's the best place
Definitely.
To go?
Yeah, so I recommend you go to kite-hill.com to see their line of all of their dairy-free products and then all of the recipes that I recommend.
All right. We want to thank our friend, the chef, Jane Olivia. I'll tell you what, you've got us thinking about Dairy-Free February. For Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox. Thanks for listening.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Now, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV, here's Doug Petcash from the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10 TV.
Right now, the Trump administration's strict immigration policies are playing out across the country and our state. Already, jail records show ICE has detained roughly 100 people in Ohio. Also, an Ohio senator introduced a new bill to continue the crackdown on illegal immigration and fix what he calls America's broken asylum system. Meanwhile, some of his own legal constituents are living in fear that they may no longer be allowed to stay in the U.S. Thank you for joining us for Face the State. I'm Doug Petcash. As these efforts continue, I went to Springfield, Ohio last week to hear from leaders within the Haitian community. They tell me the fear of deportation is extremely high. Springfield is home to an estimated 12 to 15,000 Haitian immigrants. Many of them are here under temporary protected status, TPS, because of unstable conditions in their home country. TPS for Haiti runs until February of 2026. Community leaders say many are worried about President Trump's immigration orders and ICE raids going on around the country right now. They say a lot of people are actually staying out of sight because of their fears.
Our Haitian community is worried. Not everybody is well informed as we are. So they think not only there is going to be a raid, but they think everybody is subject to deportation. That's what they think for the most part. And that caused some people to lose wages because they don't show up for work. They're going to get fired.
They have the perspective that even if you have a legal status, you're still at risk to deportation.
Jacob Payen helps those in the Haitian community fill out some immigration forms and refers them to organizations or attorneys who can help with other questions and needs. Community leaders say they are working to give the immigrant community peace of mind by giving them good information. I asked Ohio U.S. Senator Bernie Moreno about the fears in Springfield. Here's what he said.
If they're here legally, by the way, anybody who's in this country legally should not have any fear whatsoever. The people who need to be concerned are the people who are here illegally and have committed crimes.
Moreno wants to crack down on illegal immigration and help legal asylum seekers by fixing a loophole in federal law. He recently introduced the Refugees Using Legal Entry Safely, or RULES Act, last week. He says the loophole has existed for decades. It's that someone can come into the country illegally and then claim asylum. Senator Moreno defines refugees strictly as those being discriminated against because of race, nationality, or religion. He says the bill would assure a quicker path for asylum seekers who follow the laws. If passed, the RULES Act would do four things. It would stop the release of asylum seekers into the U.S. before their cases are heard. Also, a person denied asylum once could never apply again. It would prohibit migrants who are in the U.S. illegally and get caught by law enforcement from claiming asylum. And all requests for asylum will have to be made at legal ports of entry.
So you can't cross the river or jump over a wall or go under a tunnel or be smuggled on boat. You have to come through a legal port of entry, request asylum, wait for your asylum claim to be heard before you're allowed into the country.
Senator Moreno says by law, asylum applications should be processed within 180 days. He says there's a backlog of several years right now. And joining me to talk about the raids, the immigration orders, and the fears in the immigrant community is immigration attorney Rishi Oza. He is a partner in the Ohio-based firm Brown Immigration Law. He joins me today from North Carolina, where the firm has an office. Rishi, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Good morning.
Hey, first of all, what do you think of the Trump administration's immigration policies as they're playing out right now?
Well, I mean, I think Mr. Trump ran on a enforcement-heavy platform. He's carrying out what he ran on. I think it has injected, as the previous comments from the Haitian community are pretty accurate. And I think the concern and the fear and anxiety is kind of across the board. I've heard from a lot of my prior clients, some of whom are U.S. citizens, about being concerned, you know, as to enforcement action. So I think this is kind of an expected outcome based upon what the president has indicated he wants to do. And he's carrying out what he ran on.
And are these raids, you know, following the letter of the law?
So generally speaking, the president and the Department of Homeland Security has the authority to do what they're doing. You know, Mr. Trump has been very good about broadcasting and making a show of the muscular efforts from the Department of Homeland Security. To my knowledge, nothing is being done outside the authority that's granted to the president by the Congress. So he's following the law. He's just doing it in a much more broadcasted intentional, maybe attention-grabbing way compared to what's been done in the past by previous administrations.
did previous administrations, specifically the Obama administration and the Biden administration, also do deportations as the way they're being done right now by the Trump administration?
They did. I just don't think he was done in as much of a headline-grabbing manner. Mr. Obama's presidency particularly was relatively enforcement-heavy. I mean, one of the monikers that President Obama had was the deporter-in-chief. You know, enforcement actions were quite high and pretty robust under the Obama administration. The Biden administration really had a pullback. It's kind of a mixture of the President Biden coming in during COVID. And obviously during COVID, the government just wasn't functioning at such a rate. And also, it was a very intentional policy determination that they weren't going to enforce or weren't going to be as out there and as visible as Mr. Trump is. And Mr. Trump has really made an effort to making clear that the enforcement piece of his immigration policy is going to be front and center. So it's not as if these things didn't exist. I just don't think they existed in such a headline grabbing way.
And what impact do you think that has, that it is so out there right now? Is it sending a message to people who are outside the country right now wanting to get in?
I think so. I think that there's very much a deterrent factor that the Trump administration is trying to indicate to folks that aren't even in the United States yet of here are the conditions that are going to exist in the country if and when you do get here, if you're going to try to get here. So, I think that's been relatively intentional of trying to discourage people from trying to enter the United States unlawfully, knowing that there is this heavy law enforcement presence waiting for them if they're going to try to enter the country unlawfully.
Is your firm getting a lot more calls over the last week or so?
Yeah, it's been much busier than expected. And I think there's sometimes obviously it's a Friday, there's a little bit of an exhaustion that sets in, but it's been ever since the election. We've seen a marked uptick in calls and people taking actions of people scheduling appointments since November. Obviously since the inauguration was only, 10 days ago. So it's been busy.
What are you hearing from people who are calling? What are their concerns and questions?
I think there's just a general sense of concern in terms of what the concern is really uncertainty. And I think that's really what's driving a lot of people calling in, is they're not sure as to what's going to happen. This weekend, I'm actually going to be speaking at a church with, I think, 100, 150 attendees coming. And I know a lot of them are just going to have questions about what should I do if I run into ICE? Like I mentioned, I had a client of mine who's a citizen. She's been a citizen for 8-10 years now, is concerned about what happens if I get stopped by ICE. What do I do? And I think that's the uncertainty that's driving a lot of people trying to figure out what their options are. And I will say Mr. Trump's been quite the motivator. People that have been sitting on actions that they can take are now taking them. People are applying for citizenship. People are trying to find ways in which to remedy their status. And, that's really been a lot of what our focus has been, of trying to find solutions for folks that are here in the United States, many of which are green card holders who want to apply for citizenship now because they're worried about their green card status.
President Trump also has stated that he wants to end birthright citizenship. That's being challenged in court. What do you think will happen with that? And what about the measure, the push for that itself?
Well, I think ultimately the case will probably make its way to the Supreme Court. Birthright citizenship is enshrined in the 14th Amendment, and people can have, very good faith policy discussions as to what it entails. The way birthright citizenship has been treated ever since the 14th Amendment passed is that if you're born in the United States, you're a United States citizen. There's a clause which essentially says if you're born in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, which is kind of what the argument is based on, is who's subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. So my opinion, I think the way that we've always interpreted it is going to stand. There's very few carve-outs. So children of foreign diplomats aren't considered citizens, but I think it's my opinion is it's a little bit of a show. Mr. Trump has said that this is what he's going to try to do. Do I think they're going to win? I don't. But, in this environment, ultimately, it's going to probably end up in front of the Supreme Court.
And finally, Reese, in the time we have left, just what do you think ultimately will be the result of these immigration efforts by the Trump administration?
Well, I mean, the one thing I would tell your viewers is that the government moves slowly. And I realize that the president ran on this idea of doing all the stuff very quickly. But folks that work with the government often note is that things don't move slowly with the government. Part of our system is to give people the opportunity to have their case heard. And so, you know, if someone interacts with ICE, they're not immediately going to be sent to the airport and get deported. They have the opportunity to go see an immigration judge, make their claim for being able to stay in the United States. And that's what we want. We want a system that hears people out, and we want a system that is going to treat people fairly and not just kind of heavy-handedly just remove somebody from the United States without understanding what their story is. So my inclination is that a lot of money is going to need to be spent towards achieving Mr. Trump's aims. But, you know, realistically, is the government going to be capable of deporting 10, 15 million people in the next 4 years? I just don't see how that's possible.
Rishi Oza with Brown Immigration Law, thank you for your perspective this morning. I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
See you soon. Well, dozens of people carrying signs and Mexican flags gathered along busy Morse Road in Columbus Wednesday night to show their support for immigrant families. They protested recent changes and policies on immigration. 10TV's Carly Dion spoke to some who were making their voices heard.
I had a close friend who got just deported on Monday.
Michael Guzman Martinez says he's adjusting to a new, harsh reality.
I walk around with my passport, I have my ID, I memorize my social security number just in case.
It's an adjustment that has many immigrant families now living in fear. Although Martinez says he's a legal U.S. citizen, his parents, who came to the United States from Mexico, are undocumented. He says they moved here in the early 90s.
I was having a talk with my mom yesterday and my dad as well, and they were like, if they deport us, it's okay. You're old enough to take care of you and your siblings.
But it's something he's fighting against.
Honestly, it's not okay, especially for me, because I want them near me. And so I don't want them to go back to Mexico.
Martinez says his parents came here to live out the American dream, and he made good on their hopes for him to have a better life.
I graduated high school. I went to Ohio State. I'm an alum from Ohio State as well. I got my real estate license at 19. I bought my first house this year, my primary house, and I'm only 23. Like they wanted a better opportunity for their kids, and they got it.
Michelle Resendiz has a similar background.
Me, personally, I am the product of illegal immigration, and I'm proud of that. This is not anything about criminals. We are not criminals. We are not here to steal your jobs. We are here for much more. We are here to accomplish much more for our families and our future families.
Which is why she's speaking out and protesting deportations and giving a voice to the voiceless.
All of the younger generations are here speaking up for our older generations who may not have the legal status to come out here and protest for themselves and speak up for themselves.
That was Carly Dion reporting. Martinez says the main message they wanted to send to immigrant families is they are not alone and they will continue to fight for them. Could President Trump's proposed tariffs on Canada and Mexico lead to a trade war that would hurt Ohio businesses? Next on Face the State, Ohio Chamber of Commerce CEO Steve Stivers on the fears of retaliatory tariffs, plus where he thinks tariffs could be good for the U.S. And later, changing the rules for recreational marijuana. New legislation could make it more expensive to buy and affect how much Ohioans can grow at home. We'll break down the brand new bill.
Columbus Perspective is a public affairs presentation of WBNS Radio. The opinions expressed on this program are those of its guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WBNS Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's more from Face the State, courtesy of 10TV.
Welcome back to Face the State. The Trump administration announced new potential tariffs on China, Mexico, and Canada. As of the taping of this show, they were not in effect. China would face a 10% tariff across the board on goods. Mexico and Canada could face a 25% tariff. Ohio Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Steve Stivers is a former U.S. congressman for the state of Ohio. He believes most of the tariffs could be part of a larger deal putting America first. 10TV's Clay Gordon sat down with Stivers to talk about the potential impacts of the Trump tariffs on Ohio businesses.
Mr. Stivers, we are hearing a lot of tariffs talk right now from the White House. What was your initial reaction? This was a campaign promise, and it looks like it's coming to fruition.
Well, certainly President Trump talked about tariffs during the campaign. This shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. And while, you know, we are a business organization that's generally free enterprise, when you think about tariffs against folks like China that are violating trade laws, manipulating their currency, dumping products, it's hard to really argue against those. And in fact, those probably are needed. It's a smart strategy to use the threat of tariffs to bring people to the table. And we'll see what happens, but we would be very concerned, especially on the energy that goes back and forth. We have oil refineries in Ohio, 6 oil refineries. One of the major feeders to those oil refineries is Canadian crude oil and Canadian energy. And if there was a tariff on that, it could really hit consumers at the gas pump. And that's a place that consumers pay a lot of attention.
What are you hearing from your members? Because Ohio, the state of Ohio's largest importers and exports go to Canada, Mexico, and China.
Yeah.
So what are you hearing from some of your members that have to do business with Canada and Mexico frequently?
Our members are concerned, but I think, you know, I will tell you, we did a survey of our members. They are more optimistic about the economy now than they have been in any time since I've been here, and I've been here 3.5 years. So I think generally they feel good about less regulation, consistent taxes. The tariffs sometimes can scare some of our members, for sure. But so far, it's been fairly measured, and we're going to work to try to make sure the administration hears both sides on tariffs. We know they know some of the good things about tariffs. We want to help them understand that sometimes tariffs can hurt consumers. But there, we do have members that are sort of stuck where China's the only place they can do business. And I think there might need to be some considerations around those things. If it's the only place you can get something, then, you know, there's not much you can do to plan around it. But a lot of our members are actively rearranging their supply chain and have been for 3 to 5 years.
Now, there are already tariffs on China in place from
that's correct
Trump's
from the first
administration.
Trump and the Biden administration didn't do away with any of those tariffs.
And what was the impact for Ohio businesses with that first round?
Well, there was a lot of supply chain rearranging that started during the first Trump administration, or even a little before, and then accelerated during COVID, which was at the end of the Trump administration. So there's been years to try to start to pull some of that back.
I talked to two economists yesterday. Their concern was retaliatory tariffs, specifically with Mexico and Canada.
In Canada, for sure.
So they pose that, you know, some Ohio farmers could be impacted the most. So
for sure.
Corn and soybean. And then our auto industry here, too. So if they do kind of stay in place as is, what does the Ohio Chamber do in a situation like that?
Well, we would be very concerned about retaliatory tariffs as well. And, you know, I was in Congress when we negotiated and changed the North American trade arrangement to the USMCA, and that was under the Trump administration. I think it was a good deal for the United States. It was a good deal for American workers. It was a good deal for Canada and Mexico. That's why all three countries ratified it. We're living under the USMCA right now, and it's treating us pretty well, in my opinion. But if the administration wants to try to get a better deal on a few things, I'm all in favor of having them look at that. I hope they don't just, you know, blanket tariffs, that they try to come to a new negotiation on USMCA if there's problems with it.
Finally, do you think Ohio business can keep up with some tariffs? Because, you know, usually you cut out, you know, maybe some Chinese manufacturers, and it, you know, falls in on local businesses or American businesses to kind of take that infrastructure on. Do you think Ohio's prepared for that?
I think we are prepared to grow and surge with any demand that's available. You know, we certainly are always, most of our members are right now looking for employees. The unemployment rate is relatively low, 4.3%. And so one of the questions is, do we have enough workers? But I feel confident in the productivity of the Ohio and the American workers to meet the demand that comes. And, you know, that's a good thing. When sales increase, that's great for America, American income, American families, and our quality of life.
Former Congressman Steve Stivers, thank you.
Hey, thank you.
And we have more from Steve Stivers right now on 10TV.com. Turning to the State House now. State lawmakers are trying to change the rules on recreational marijuana in Ohio. The new Senate Bill 56 would increase the tax on recreational marijuana sales from 10% to 15%. The bill would also get rid of the Cannabis Social Equity and Jobs Fund. That's one of the four categories where the tax revenue from the recreational marijuana sales goes. And the bill aims to lower the limit of homegrown plants from 12 to 6 per household. Local dispensaries tell us they are following this new bill closely.
Politics play a huge role in our economy every day. It would be ridiculous not to pay attention to what's going on with our board and how it affects our business.
The bill was just introduced this past week, so it is still a long way from possibly going up for a vote. Coming up next, truckers against trafficking. They're joining forces with Travel Centers of America to try to roll out a new campaign. The goal? To save people from a life trapped in human trafficking. And you can help. We'll tell you how.
It can be hard to find eggs at the grocery store, and if you do find a dozen, you might have sticker shock at the price. People on social media blame bird flu, but is that claim all it's cracked up to be? Let's verify. Our sources are the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the North Carolina State University College of Veterinary Medicine, and UC Davis Magazine. All of our sources say the root of the higher prices that you're seeing is a traditional supply and demand issue. First, the supply. In February 2022, the USDA began tracking a highly contagious bird flu that's still spreading today. The standard practice at egg farms where the flu is detected is to kill off the entire flock, even healthy birds. In December 2024 alone, more than 13 million egg-laying chickens were killed. Fewer chickens means fewer eggs during the holidays, when demand for eggs spikes to make all those delicious treats. With less supply and high demand, prices skyrocketed. The Consumer Price Index shows the cost of eggs increased almost 37% last year, compared to just 3% for all goods, and prices are still increasing. On January 17th, the USDA reported the nationwide average price of a dozen eggs is $5.87, more than a dollar higher than just a week ago. So, yes, there is an egg shortage due to bird flu, and it's likely to continue. NC State says it can take 5 months for a farm's new baby chickens to start producing eggs. Meanwhile, bird flu continues to spread. With UA Verify, I'm Brandon Lewis.
Victor deployed for the first time to Afghanistan in 2003. He sustained a moderate traumatic brain injury. One of the most important elements of caregiving is taking care of yourself.
For many military veteran caregivers, their caregiving journey starts earlier in life and lasts longer. Visit aarp.org/caregiving for a free military veteran's guide to navigate your caregiving journey and better care for your loved one and yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, is a common seasonal virus, but it can have major implications on a patient's heart health. Most RSV cases involve mild cold-like symptoms, but up to 160,000 adults are hospitalized each year for more serious cases, and RSV can escalate chronic health issues. If you're over the age of 60, talk to your doctor to find out if the new RSV vaccine is right for you, and learn more at heart.org/RSV.
President Trump reportedly directed Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers to conduct at least 1,500 arrests daily, particularly targeting individuals with outstanding removal orders or criminal records. Images appearing to show ICE arrests have gone viral online, including one of a young girl screaming during an interaction with an ICE agent, and another of a man wearing a Latinos for Trump shirt, handcuffed and being escorted by ICE agents. Using these sources, let's verify if these images are real. The image of the little girl is not real. It was made with artificial intelligence. The person who created the image told fact-checking website Snopes that the image was generated with Grok, X's AI creation tool. AI-generated images often have misshapen or distorted features. In this image, the girl's left shoulder appears distorted, and the ICE agent's ear is misshapen. The bottom of the image is also a different texture than the rest of the image. Next, the image of ICE detaining a man wearing a Latinos for Trump shirt isn't real either. The image was digitally altered. Using RevEye, a reverse image search engine, Verify found the original photo of the man in the altered image. It was taken in June 2018 by ICE and shows footage from a raid conducted at an Ohio-based meat supplier. If we put the images side by side, it's clear the agents and the detained man are in the same positions, and the backgrounds are identical. However, in the edited version, the label on the man's hard hat is missing, and a Latinos for Trump logo was superimposed onto his shirt. The wording on the ICE agent's clothing was also changed, from police HSI to police ICE. With your Verify, I'm Ariande Till.
There's a new partnership in Ohio to help put an end to human trafficking. Attorney General Dave Yost announced the Travel Centers of America and the nonprofit Truckers Against Trafficking are joining forces in a new awareness campaign. The goal is all about increasing awareness on Ohio's roadways. Bumper stickers and signs inside travel centers will show this hotline. It's 844-END-OHHT. That's END Ohio Human Trafficking. The CEO of Travel Centers of America talked about the importance of this initiative.
We are committed to help combat this crime. We're so proud in that we train our nearly 19,000 team members to look out for the signs of human trafficking.
The Attorney General's office announced another easy way to report suspected human trafficking. Apple and Android users can now download the new NOHHT app.
Again, that's Doug Petcash, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV, from the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10 TV. This has been Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan, heard each Sunday morning at 6 on WBNS FM 97.1 The Fan and on 1460 AM ESPN Columbus.